Let's turn the page and head away from the terror imposed by Islam for the next hour and consider what Yahweh was offering to humankind, trying to save us from the onslaught that religion had bequeathed upon the planet. We were in the midst of Bereshit Genesis as the program concluded on Friday. And Yahweh said to Noah, Noah is, you know, a name that based upon two different verbs, and the verb suggests that Noah means a trustworthy and reliable God, a guide to a place that is joyous and protected, that is based upon a relational agreement. And so Yahweh said to Noah, go into the ark, the Tibah, you and your household, Be'eth. Remember, God has already told us that Yahweh was establishing his covenant, his Be'eth, with Noah. Well, he's now telling us that the covenant is based upon Be'eth, family and household. Because indeed, I have seen, I have perceived that those with you are upright, they are Sadak, by means of my presence in this home and family, this generation. Sadak being the proof here that Paul lied when he said that Yahweh's Torah had no ability to enable someone to be righteous, when Paul lied in Romans when he said there is none who is righteous, no, not one. All lies on behalf of Paul. The comparison of Be'eth, as we were considering this on Friday, Be'eth covenant and Be'eth family, is further advanced when one examines the other root, or the primary root of Be'eth, which is Bana. Bana means to build, to rebuild, to establish a home and family, causing it to continue. This is the very nature of the covenant. The etymological shadings of Bo, which was to go into, enter, and be included into the ark, which was the protective enclosure, speaks also of arriving. It speaks of forming an association. It speaks of a limited group being able to return, being gathered, being guided, being directed to a special place. Noah's tiba, or method of rescuing his family, translated as ark, or chest, or vessel, or boat, even ship, and the Ark of the Covenant, the Aaron Be'eth, are similar, metaphorically. Aaron, which speaks of the ark, or chest, known as the Ark of the Covenant, and the tiba, this vessel that would protect Noah's family, very similar concepts metaphorically. Also, as it relates to the Aaron Be'eth, Aaron in Hebrew means enlightened free will. So the covenant and your choice to participate in the covenant is based upon enlightened free will. Now, throughout Yah's Torah, prophets, and Psalms, Yahweh reinforces the notion that our salvation is synonymous with the concept of tzedakah, being upright. Vindication to those who are established. It's a very unique term whose primary meaning is to be upright, to be standing on one's feet, to be engaged walking, to be engaged going someplace, and that really is the basis of salvation. It is afforded to those who have acted upon the terms and conditions of the covenant, which has them actively walking away from Babylon, from religious and political influences, have them walking to God along the path that he has provided, have us walking with God. We were told that Noah was chosen because of his upright nature within his family, his upright attitude with his family, and because he walked with God. Halak made him tzedakah. Walking with God is what makes us vindicated, righteous in God's eyes. Now, there are several unique insights that are also worth considering. death, as I have mentioned before, is not always translated from Hebrew into English, although it means with. In this particular case, Yahweh said, I have seen that those with you are upright, and eth is the word conveying with. And it is used throughout Yah's Torah, prophets, and Psalms to speak of Yahweh engaging with us. And in this particular case, he was eth with Noah in the construction of this ark to protect his family. Similarly, throughout the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, law is very often translated to or toward, but can mean among, concerning, on behalf of, according to, and by means of. It was used in this passage to speak of us being this, specifically Yahweh saying, you and your household, because indeed, this is key, I have seen, ra'ah, that those with you are upright, eth, atah, sadak, by means of my presence. By means of was from law, but it primarily means to approach, to draw near. And so they were upright because they drew near to Yahweh. They approached his presence. The means that we approach Yahweh's presence is by attending his seven annual meetings, beginning with the doorway known as Passover, where we literally come to know Yahweh through this process of answering his invitations to meet with him. So we have lots of insights here worth our consideration, where we come to know the symbolism of this, just as we come to know its history. So we learn that Noah's household was saved because they, like Noah, were a family who walked with Yahweh. They engaged with God. They walked to him. They walked with him. Noah and his family were seen as upright and vindicated because they sought to approach Yahweh and because of Yahweh's presence in their lives. In other words, they were home to the set-apart spirit. She lived in them, protecting them, sheltering them, making them appear perfect in God's eyes because they had chosen to form a covenant relationship with Yahweh, something Yahweh himself has already acknowledged. The ark was not only Noah's home, it was Yahweh's home because Yahweh resided within Noah's family. Now, there are those who try to discredit Scripture, saying that there is a contradiction in the next statement. Was Noah to bring 2, 7, or 14 of each species into this ship known as the ark? Here is how it is presented. From all of the clean, domesticated animals, take for yourself 7 males and 7 females, and 2 related pairs of animals which are not clean, male and female. Now, this statement is advancing the scriptural concept of substituting, of a substitute, I should say, being sacrificed to resolve the consequence of sin. And so there was a desire to maintain the animal population of the region that would be flooded. And so that's the reason why they were male and female. But there was also the, you had 2 issues. One is that the timing of this, by just Yah's nature, had to begin on Passover. The doorway to life had to therefore include matzah and bakudim, the threshold to perfection and the means to be adopted into Yahweh's family, and then had to conclude with Shavuah. And for each of these festival feasts, there is a specific menu. And when it comes to the sacrifices of the clean animals, it isn't so much that the animal is sacrificed strictly for the remission of sin as a guilt offering. The family consumes them. This is about nourishing the family. These animals aren't killed for nothing. It's very much like we would go to the supermarket and buy lamb. They are have been slaughtered for the specific purpose of a festival feast where we are nourished by them. And so this would be 40 days and 40 nights of rain, followed by a period where the waters would recede, and it would transpire over the first four mikra, and therefore the menu was necessary aboard the ark to feed and nourish Yahweh's family, Noah's family, and thereby provide the means for them to attend and celebrate these first four Moed Mikre, these first four festival feasts. And that's why there was clean and unclean animals, particularly the lambs being the source of the clean animals. But you look at the menu that is ascribed for particularly the Mikra of Shavua, the promise of seven, and you can see that there are subtleties telling us that God wanted Noah and his family prepared to be able to celebrate it. Now, Noah understood that by a clean, domesticated animal, God meant an unblemished lamb. And he knew that the reason for including them is evidence of what he did following the deluge. The Mikre had been established, as had the prophetic path to Yahweh's sacrifice on Mount Moriah. There were seven Mikre, so there would be a need of seven pairs of animals. It's not just that, you know, a different animal is necessary for each of the seven Mikre. It's just that the number seven, as it relates to this path to God, is essential. And so God reinforced it by talking about seven pairs of animals. This insight is also hinted at in the Abel-Cain story. The reason that Yahweh found favor with Abel's sacrifice of a lamb and not with Cain's grain offering was that he had told Adam's son how to resolve the problem of their mortality now that their father and mother had chosen poorly and had been expelled from the garden. Yahweh's story from beginning to end is consistent. And so even here we find the story of a sacrificial lamb. And of that sacrificial lamb in conjunction with the salvation of Noah's family. Just as the sacrificial lamb was provided when the covenant would be reaffirmed with Abraham on Mount Moriah, Yahweh himself telling Abraham that he was providing the lamb. We'll return to Shattering Myths after the commercial break. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. As we continue to consider the instructions, we recognize that the unclean animals were simply food. There were carnivores aboard the ship, and therefore seven pairs of birds were also brought aboard for the same reason, and the quote is, to keep alive the seed of life, Haya Zera, upon the whole land, the region or the area. And again, God could have resolved this issue just miraculously. He could have intervened and say, this is an act of God and I'm going to accomplish what I want. Noah, you and your family are protected. I'm going to take some of the animals and I'm going to protect them in this region and then we'll zap everything else. And yet he didn't do it that way. And he didn't do it that way for a reason. One is that, you know, God set up the natural laws that that govern our planet. Everything from weather to the, you know, the solar cycles and the like. And he is very, very infrequently engages to override the natural laws. And it's extraordinarily rare that he will to do so. That's why it is so laughable when we think that man has labeled natural catastrophes an act of God. But the most important reason is that God created the life on this planet and the universe as a whole strictly to enjoy a covenant relationship, a family-oriented relationship with his creation. And so working through Noah serves God's purpose. It's what he is all about. It's why he works through individuals to reveal his testimony. Also, there is a subtle thought here worth considering. It comes up in a number of different places. And that is that God has told us that all animals have souls. So we know that souls are immortal. But we've also told that God rather enjoys animal souls. He is shown in the Garden of Great Joy in the Gan Eden, celebrating life with Noah. We have every indication that in eternity we're going to be celebrating life as well. And that life is going to be one of the things that makes our journey with Yah through eternity interesting. And so it isn't just humans that are on the ark, but also animals. And so there is this sense that God enjoys life, and he wishes to protect it. And so it can be enjoyed by us and by him. So then, reemphasizing seven as his favorite number, the story of what was going to transpire to rid this region of the earth of the corruption that had become manifest, reads as follows. Indeed, key, upon the passage of 7 days, I will send rain down upon the region, the land and the area, for 40 days and for 40 nights. And I will wash off and wipe out Ma'ah, clean and annihilate, blot out and obliterate accordingly all of the living creatures which stand. This is a Yakum, life forms which are established upright, whom relationally Asher I made from upon the presence, the panay of the ground, Adamah. Adamah is unlike Eretz in that both Adamah and Eretz can speak of the ground, but Adamah really speaks of the minute particles that comprise the soil. It's the word from which Adam's name, the very concept of man, is derived, Adamah. And so God is giving a 7-day warning, and the 7-day reinforces the seven Moed Mikra, the path that that saves us from ourselves, the path from human reliance to a reliance on Yahweh's covenant. And he says that that's when it's that he's going to send rain down upon the region. He had a very interesting mechanism for sending rain down on this region, which we will consider here in a moment. And that it was going to rain for 40 days and 40 nights. The reason for 40, God never mentions, never communicates a detail that isn't conveyed for a reason. So 7 days was to reinforce that everything that's in Yahweh's formula is based upon 6, the number of man, plus God, who is 1, equals 7, which is us living together. But this was going to, the rain was going to fall for 40 days and 40 nights. 40 is the number of a completion of a time of testing. You'll note that the children of Israel were in Egypt for 400 years, a multiple of 40. That they were in the wilderness for 40 years. That Yahusha was tested 40 days and 40 nights before he began his ministry at age 30. All of the references to 40, and there's many of them, including the 40 days and 40 nights that it would rain, this being the first of them, are all there to establish that 40 is an extremely important number that we should be aware of as it relates to an era of testing. Back in a moment. Received an email during the break from a listener who made a keen observation. It was one that I've been implying but have not said as clearly as he articulated. But the reality is that for God to instruct Noah on the number of clean and unclean animals that would be above the ark, it means that Yahweh's Torah, or teaching, or guidance regarding what was clean and unclean, had to have previously been given to Noah. And if based upon this, what we know is that just like was the case with Abraham, Yahweh provides his guidance to those who he engages in a relationship with. This would be the same thing with Noah and Chawa. For them to know what they could and could not eat, could and could not do in the garden, God's guidance had to be given to them. God's guidance is his Torah. So God's guidance or his instruction would have had to have been given to Noah for the instruction on clean and unclean animals to have made any sense. And therefore, God is telling you, think about this now. I provided instruction to Noah, and Noah responded to my instruction. If we wish to be protected individually and as a family, with God being the source of our protection, we too need to listen to his guidance and respond to it. Just as God provided his Torah guidance to Noah and he acted upon it, so should we. Now, as we consider this particular passage, the first word that jumped out at us was Yakum, that he's going to wash off and wipe out Ma'ah, clean and obliterate, blot out accordingly, all of the living creatures which stand, Yakum, life forms which are established upright. And with Yakum, we find that it is most closely related to Yakut, which means fragile. Those who ensnare and entrap, indicative of those who are insolent, arrogant, and haughty towards authority. So with Kum, meaning stands up, serving as the basis for Yakum, it's not hard to see how this word describes mankind, which was the only animal actually designed to be upright, to walk upright on our feet, which is inherently fragile and uniquely arrogant, and a species best known for trapping its prey through religion and politics mainly. This connection to man is why I suppose Yahweh closed his depiction of what he was going to do with Adama, which is dirt, ground in the sense of dirt, rather than Eretz, which is land in the sense of a region. The former is indicative of Adam, the first man, which is why Adama and Adam share the same letters in Hebrew. And the latter is the region, this promised land of Yahweh, or of a region that God, in this particular case, was going to flood. Now, the reason that we know that 40 quantifies a completion of a time of testing, which is really important in this statement, is because Yahweh always uses 40 in that context. The pattern was established with the flood. This was the first time we hear of 40 days and 40 nights, but it wasn't the only place, nor was the duration of time ever random. The children of Israel wandered in the wilderness for 40 years before they were allowed to enter the promised land. Yahweh took 40 days and 40 nights to reveal the Torah to Moshe on Mount Horeb, a time which severely tested the Israelites. 40 was further confirmed when Yahusha was tested for 40 days and 40 nights in the wilderness prior to the consummation of his mission. And after enduring Satan's torments in Sheol during the Mikra of Unleavened Bread, the risen soul of the Masiah Yahusha, now reunited with Yahweh's Spirit, spent 40 days with his disciples prior to his ascension, a time which the disciples were being prepared for the ultimate test. Now, the three eras of man are divided into 40 Yobel periods. So with 40 being underscored as a time of testing, and the Yobel being the time when Yahweh instructs us to release all captives, freeing people from slavery, and to forgive all debts, that is the essence of the Yobel year, which is 7 times 7 plus 1. 40 times 7 times 7 plus 1, which is 50, is 2,000 years. And so we're dealing with 2,000-year segments of time when we try to understand Yahweh's timeline and understand when every major event in our redemptive history either has or will transpire. So the first was comprised of the era of verbal communication and of a fairly simple and friendly familial covenant with individuals and their families from Adam to Abraham. 2,000 years exactly, or 40 Yobels precisely from the time that Adam and Chawa were expelled from the garden, was the time that Yahweh affirmed his covenant relationship with Abraham and told us through him how to participate in it. The second epic depicts the formalization of that covenant, same covenant relationship, by way of written communication with a chosen people and for a particular people in a particular place. And that is the time from Abraham to the time that Yahusha would fulfill that Torah on Mount Moriah. 100% of Yahweh's testimony was revealed by those people in that place during that time. Everything we read in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms comes to us from those people during that time in that place. And it was a third then... 2,000-year period begins immediately after Yahusha's fulfillment of the first four Moed Mikre, enabling the covenant's promises, and it portrays the perfect example which was set by Yahusha for us to follow, the living manifestation of the Torah. Well, exactly 40 Yobel transpired from Adam's fall to the establishment of the covenant with Abraham. There were exactly 40 Yobel from Abraham's willingness to sacrifice his only son on Mount Moriah, with Yahweh ultimately providing the sacrificial lamb, to Yahusha's actual sacrifice on Mount Moriah on Pesach Passover in year 4000 Yah 33 CE. And there will be 40 Yobel precisely between Yahusha's fulfillment of Pesach, Matzah, Bukurim, and Shavuah in year 4000 Yah, to Yahweh's return on Yom Kippurim in 2033, 6,000 Yah. It's the only Yovel year remaining with the lifespan of the generation that witnessed the return of Yisraelites to Yisrael. So, within this statement, we find that these seven Moed Mikre that are being fulfilled over this period of time are all fall into place, being fulfilled in the Yobel years. They are all being fulfilled within a very specific timeline where 40 Yobel comes into play, all of which was announced by the time that it would reign, all of which was reinforced by all of the mentions of 40 as being a time of testing. So returning now to the story, unlike the haughty individuals who had chosen to rebel and corrupt the earth, choosing their own path, Noah acted upon everything which God had instructed him to do. Bereshith in the beginning, Genesis 7:5. You know, if we want to be part of God's family, if we want to receive his protection, if we want God to save our family, if we want to engage in a perfect, eternal relationship with him, camping out with him in the universe, with him as our Father forever, then we too ought to act upon and engage in God's instruction. That's the thing that sets Noah apart from the rest of the world. It is what sets us apart from the rest of the world when we come to know the terms and conditions of his covenant, and act upon them. It is the thing that sets Christians apart in a very different way from the covenant. It's what sets Muslims in that same way apart from the covenant. Those who choose, because of religious indoctrination, to ignore, to disregard, or to despise Yahweh's instructions as they are presented in the Torah, and to meet with God on the days that he has so designed, or to accept and embrace and act upon the terms and conditions of the covenant, they will find themselves separated from him, destroyed along with the world. But those who act upon Yahweh's instructions, his guidance, as Noah did, as Abraham did, as Moshe did, as Dode, whom we know as David, did, they will find themselves in God's family, his sons and daughters, living with him forever. This is the ultimate prescription from the owner's manual of how to live forever. Now, this brings us to a passage that we grappled with when trying to establish our timeline. It says, and Noah's son, 600 repetitions, and the flood existed on the land. So this is from Bereshith, Genesis 7:6. So it reads that Noah, who is our trustworthy guide to the joyous home by way of the relationship, was 600. And in this case, six is the number of man, very telling in this regard, because man plus God, in addition to God, equals seven in our quest to understand God's timeline, his means to engage in a relationship with us. So for that purpose, symbolically, there had to be six associated with Noah, and there, in fact, is 600 repetitions. Shana means years, repeats, and changes. And the flood came to be, was, transpired. And the waters rose upon the land, this region. Now, in that the terminology for the hundreds place was added by rabbis. It's from Mia and then Sana. But much of what we find in Paleo-Hebrew was written using an Egyptian symbol, which was a horizontal line above letters. It is, in this case, germane for us to ascertain the one thing that is important here. 600 is the number of man. As you will notice also in this testimony regarding the covenant that is established here with Noah and his family and us through them, that Noah had only one wife, as did Noah's sons. That is the model that Yahweh is establishing with us. It says, reads here, Noah and his sons, his wife, singular, and his sons' wives, went into the ark to escape from the presence of the flood, the Mabul, the overwhelming and inundating waters. The waters would overwhelm this region. So God, as he had promised, did specifically what he had said he was going to do, and it came to be on the seventh day that the waters of the deluge, the Mabul, came to exist upon the land, the Eretz, the region in the area. God's not saying that he flooded the entire earth, but simply this Eretz, this region, which began in terms of the northwestern periphery, would be just west, I should say, of the Black Sea, eastern Turkey, if you will, Lake Van area. Then it runs all the way down from the north at the Black and the Caspian Seas to the mouth of the Tigris-Euphrates rivers. That was the area to be flooded, and God has now reemphasized a second time that it was on the seventh day that the waters began to exist. Seven, reemphasizing his formula for everything that is important to us. So based upon this, as we look forward in time toward the fulfillment of the Torah's final prophecies, we should expect no diminishment in punctuality. The pattern depicted here of 7 and 40 is and has been and will be repeated with reliable precision. It is how Yahweh's clock runs. While there is some doubt as to the meaning of the first half of the following message, the remainder is perfectly clear. It reads, the repetition are the years, the sana, changes and renewals, 600s, so 600s of years Noah had lived. In the second month, in the 17th day of the month, in that day, a great magnitude and quantity, a rob, deep ocean water, ta'un, and all underground springs, subterranean cisterns, burst forth and gushed, and the floodgates of the skies, the atmosphere, Shamayim were opened, Patah, freed and released. So God is being very precise in terms of the timing of this. I'm not sure we have great clarity regarding that because of the way that numbers were provided. But the takeaway should be from us that the fact that this was 600 years, and then in the second month, in the 17th day of the month, that day, a great magnitude and quantity, then we'll go forward from there. But precision. God is telling us this was at a very precise time, and you should look at all time this way. That when I give you a date, I give you the date for a reason. I want you to think it through and understand what the implications of this are. And, you know, if you look at the flood, it comes in between the time that Adam and Chawa were expelled from the Garden of Eden to the time that the means back into the garden via the covenant was enabled through Abraham. And right in the midst of that is when Yahweh begins to establish his covenant with Noah. And that if we look at the precision of 7 and 40 as the model for everything going forth, we can know for certain exactly when God intervened to enable the promises that he has made regarding his covenant. Now, the second part of this is particularly revealing. He said that a great magnitude and quantity, Rob, of deep ocean water, Ta'um, and all of the underground springs, Mayan, subterranean cisterns, burst and gushed forth, and the floodgates of the skies were opened. So waters came from three places. The oceans, they came from underground springs, and they came also from the sky. And the first of those is deep ocean water. Very seldom understood, very seldom translated, but it is there nonetheless. And when we return to Shattering Mists at this time tomorrow, we will consider why God used those three terms and what they say to us about the place and timing and nature of the flood.